Good morning, everybody. This is, believe it or not, already September 25th, 2018, and this is a work session of the Portland City Council. Today's subject is privacy and data protection, which is something that's very important. The City of Portland is thinking critically about the use of technology and data, and as I've said many times before, we can't let technology happen to us. We need to shape how technology can work to serve all of us. So when the Office of Equity and Human Rights brought the concept of privacy and data protection to my attention, I thought it was a good opportunity to further shape the conversation around meaningful adaptation of technology, data collection, and data use. So without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to my operations director, Elizabeth Perez, who's going to start us off. Good morning, Commissioner.
All right, so I've never done this before.
It should be on, I think.
Good.
Yeah, it looks okay. On.
Great. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Perez. I am the Mayor's Operations Director, and for the past year I've been working closely with the Smart Cities team in BPS and then the citywide Smart Cities work group. Furthermore, I've had the pleasure of working with Judith in the Office of Equity and Human Rights and Hector from the Smart Cities team on this project. Thank you for your time today and your attention on this important topic of privacy and data protection. First, I want to review the reason that we are here and why we believe this is important. So the work session aims to address core privacy and data protection issues and principles to leverage the benefits of a data-rich society while minimizing threats to individual privacy and civil liberties. Privacy is a socially agreed-on respect for private and family life, home, and correspondence, while data protection is a system of data processing practices of personally identifiable or identifying data for the protection of privacy. Those two concepts are cornerstones for building trust among organizations and people, and in this case, the City of Portland and its residents. Latest events around unauthorized use of personal data by corporations have triggered policies around the world on privacy and data protection, like the European General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, and California Bill AB 375, which Hector will expand upon. These policies aim to protect how personal information in the consumer data context is handled and creates resources to support a data-rich society for the coming decades. Last week, I had the privilege of attending the Harvard Accelerator on Artificial Intelligence and Innovation in Toronto, Canada, alongside Hector. We met with representatives from cities across the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and you will not be surprised to know that every city, big and small, is working to understand how to best address the issues of collecting, storing, and securing data. And this is only increasing as the uses for technology and data expand. Along with Judith and Hector, today you will hear from Christopher Padron, City of Portland Chief Information Security Officer, Kelsey Finch, Policy Counsel from the Future of Privacy Forum, and Brian Hoffer will join us on the phone, Commissioner for the Oakland Privacy Commission. Good data is a critical resource for decision-making and measuring progress and comes with a variety of opportunities and challenges. It is key to know which data we need and to collect no more than what is needed. Beginning with clear standards alleviates the burden of collecting unnecessary data and minimizes the collection of Portlanders' personal data. For sensitive data that we must collect, we must ensure that we have good storage and security. And finally, we must maintain strong oversights for the data that we choose to share. If we are to be a smart city, we must use data and technology to tackle the biggest challenges facing Portlanders and do so mindfully. We hope that through the work session, we can begin to set some goals around privacy and data protection that will aid in increasing trust between the City of Portland and our residents, ensuring the rights and needs of our residents are always at the forefront. And with that, I'll turn it over to Judith.
Thank you. Good morning. Does that work? Yeah. I got a big voice. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioner Fritz. Good morning, Commissioner Udaly. Thank you for this opportunity to have this discussion with you today. I also would like to acknowledge working with Elizabeth and Hector has been really a wonderful experience. This year, Council approved the framework for the Smart Cities Project that has an explicit focus on supporting efforts to improve the lives of communities of color and people living with disabilities. In a world where technical advances are being developed at lightning speed, we have an opportunity to advance opportunity and for those communities and to address disparities in new and meaningful ways. With this responsibility, with this opportunity comes the responsibility to adopt essential guidance for bureaus to protect the privacy rights of Portlanders. A few months ago, I received a call from a community member who told me that he had parked in Southeast Portland and he was very surprised to have to put his license plate number into the parking meter to pay with cash. And he asked me what happens to that data and where is it kept and could this ultimately be used for surveillance? I didn't know the answers to those questions, but it began thinking about it. I'm sorry, I have to do this. This was a great project that was actually the technology that was developed was to save paper, and I would imagine litter. I've seen a lot of those little parking stubs flying around all over the place. So, you know, it was a great idea and a good use of technology, but it may have had an unintended consequence that we might not have thought through. After the 2016 election, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio became concerned about the vulnerability of the data the city had from their city ID cards. New Haven, Connecticut had to fight a public records request from anti-immigrant activists for their own data that they had collected for their ID cards. San Francisco had wisely chosen not to retain the data from the ID cards from the start. So why does this involve equity? Privacy is a fundamental human right. It's acknowledged in the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and many other international and national agreements. Privacy has become one of the most meaningful human rights in modern times. We also know that negative consequences have historically disproportionately impacted marginalized communities. Our best defense to this is a thoughtful application of an equity lens to the work of the city. We're most successful when we apply this lens at the earliest possible juncture of the development of any policy, programs, processes, so any program design. So we are fortunate to have some wonderful guests here today who have experience engaging jurisdictions that have implemented practices to address the issues of privacy and data protection. So I'm excited about this conversation and look forward to it. Good morning, Commissioner Fish. Thank you. And I will now turn it over to Hector.
Good morning. I'm Hector Dominguez. I am the Open Data Coordinator. I'm part of the Smart Cities team, which is at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm actually very excited about this opportunity because that's a milestone for us. We cannot do open data without privacy, without having those rules there, and starting to gain that trust from our community and also internal to the city. So if we can start, the first thing that I'm going to do is just set up kind of a common language, so we all understand what we're talking about, and that's the purpose of this 15 minutes presentation on privacy. If we can get the presentation ongoing, but you have actually privacy. It really has this. You have it in the packet, by the way. So privacy is actually has this paradox, right? In this rich data society, we have. We generate data and after data just by going to the shopping center and buy things with our credit card, right? By going and pay with our credit card to the bus station or the train, for instance. And everybody understands privacy in different ways. People are just joining social media and sharing tons of personal information just for free and just like that. Why is that? I mean, we are all somehow concerned about our privacy as a like our personal integrity. However, people are still doing that, so that's definitely a paradox. And one understanding is from the psychology of the social psychology perspective, we really want that interaction with others. And the side effect is that many different entities are actually taking advantage of that without letting us know what's happening behind. I think there is where cities have a great opportunity to start doing something around protecting our residents' privacy, digital privacy rights. Privacy is well defined by the U.S. law, and you can see it's defined as the right of privacy refers to the concept that one's personal information is protected from public scrutiny. If we go further, there is a really in-depth definition of what means the personal identifiable information, which is quite complex, and it refers to whatever information directly identifies an individual, aka name, address, social security number, or any other number or code for address, telephone number, email, etc., by which an agency intends to specify specific individuals in conjunction with other data and elements. For example, in indirect identification. So that means aggregating data, so finding who we are by aggregating data. There is a number of laws in the U.S. Coming from the 60s that specifically protect race, color, sex, religion, national origin, citizenship, age, pregnancy, familial status, disability status, veteran status, and genetic information as a personal identifiable information. So this is quite complex. And that's why many, particularly the European Union, has been giving some steps forward with the General Data Protection Regulation, which I'm going to talk a little bit. We can move next. Yes. So Elizabeth already defined what data protection is and what data privacy also refers to. Basically, data privacy refers to any unauthorized access to that information, and data protection refers on how we actually take care of that data and information. So jumping into what the European Union is doing, so the first step that they did was define privacy in very simple terms. So the definition of privacy, you can read it there, is basically any information, any personal data. It means that it's any information that relates to an identified or identifiable living individual. And that's it. Mm-hmm. That's very clear and straightforward. And from that, the very next step that they did was to develop some privacy rights for their citizens. Among those rights, you can see that is the... people in Europe have the right to be notified in the case of any data breach. They have the right to access what the government, or particularly these regulations, is intended for consumer data. So that means data that is managed by companies and is actually targeting mostly big companies like Facebook, Apple, and Google, for instance. And you can interrupt me anytime if you have any question. So this regulation allows people in Europe to ask Facebook, Google, so what do they own about me? How they are using my information? And also, they allow them to say, okay, so now you own some of my information, please delete everything that you know about me. And they have to comply for that. Otherwise, they get a big fine. It's a big fine around that. So it also GDPR.
Could I ask you a question on
yes.
that point? So in the European Union currently, if you ask Google or Facebook to delete everything that they have about you, they're required to do that?
They are required to do that.
So what's the hang up here in the United States?
I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but the main step forward is the AB 375 in California. It's a state-level law that is similar or is targeting similar goals as GDPR. Other than that, maybe Kelsey may know more about that, but that's the only regulation that we know. And I think, so as we move forward with this discussion, I think there is where cities have a huge push and power to move forward these kind of protections for city residents.
Thank you.
GDPR also incorporates some best guidelines like embedded privacy by design, data minimization, meaning that entities should only get the minimal information from their consumers, and also create some government bodies to check on all that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what's data portability?
Excuse me?
Data portability, could you explain that?
That transferring to third parties, for instance, data brokers or other companies. So when, for instance, Facebook, what happened with Cambridge Analytica, right? So the case was that a researcher from Cambridge, actually, was extracting personal information, not only from Facebook users, but also from their social network users as well.
Ah, okay, thank you.
And it was just selling, giving that information to third parties. So,
got it. Thank you.
So moving forward, very smart people. And moving forward to that, so there are two key keywords on that. One is trust. How do we gain trust from digital services? And the other is consent. And I would add not only consent, but the informed consent. Mm-hmm. So how do we generate trust? For digital services, we can think about generating trust by adding privacy by design, by adding some transparency, data minimization, robust cybersecurity, accountability, fairness, something that is has utility, empathy and respect, and basically something being human-centric. In terms of informed consent, so that means that people, when they agree to some terms, it's not only checking a box in a really long form, but it's really understanding how data is being managed, how long that entity that we agree to give our data and information is going to use and retain, is going to retain that information, how it's going to use, who's going to have access to all that. So that means that we understand how information is being used and transformed. And also we can have the power to say no anytime. So privacy by design is something that we are considering in our open data efforts. Privacy by design is a set of principles, seven principles that you can read there. I'm not going to go through those, but we definitely are looking into how we can incorporate those in open data. When we do a privacy and data protection assessment, we need to think about who is the recipient of that, who's the people that is being whose data is being managed by any service, digital service, what kind of information, how that information is being transformed, why and where is that done. Also, there are some risks that we need always to evaluate, risks around security, potential discrimination. For instance, data can be used when we process data, mostly when we are talking about advanced analytics, it's well known that there are biases on those algorithms, and we need to understand what those biases are and how those decisions done by algorithms are actually affecting real people. The risk for no compliance, meaning that there could be any breach or exposing personal information by de-anonymizing or aggregating data for any different form. data has to be accurate. There has to be some transparency around how we manage the data. And, of course, people have to understand what that means in terms of the digital literacy, how who's actually doing what and how. And with that, I think I'm finished. Is there any question that I can answer? I know this is a very complex topic, and we can just go on and on with that.
So are there, you mentioned the European Union.
Yes. GDPR is...
What sort of rules are we required to follow under state and federal law here?
What are the guiding principles in terms of state and federal rules that we have to follow with our data policies?
For that question, I think I can pass the mic to Christopher, who's the chief security officer.
Very good. Thank you. I'm just wondering if there's any equivalent. We have the GDPR for the European Union. Is there some similar set of standards at the federal or state level here?
Good morning. Christopher Padron, Chief Information Security Officer for the city. Good morning, Mayor
morning.
Wheeler. Good morning, Commissioner Udaly. Good morning, Commissioner Fritz. The short answer is no, there is no federal standard. There are definitions for privacy across federal law. There are as many state privacy definitions and protections as there are states. So the state of Oregon has an OCSIPTA law, the Oregon Consumer Identification Protection Act. It's been revised a couple times. It defines what is, but it's a very narrow definition. The city of Portland has agreed to use a larger definition of privacy, and we make available to all of the stakeholders a helpful guide that defines what those common field names are for privacy, for information protection, whether it's under protected health information, HIPAA, or whether it's PII for OCSIPTA, or for PCI, the payment card industry.
Very good. So it's currently fragmented then by source, if you will, or by category.
Yes.
And you alluded, Hector, to California having a different standard that was more in alignment with the EU.
They passed early this year in April, I believe, AB 375, which also targets consumer data.
Mm-hmm. And does that preempt local government?
Locally in California, yes.
Yes.
But that's just consumer.
Just consumer data,
consumer
exactly.
Data.
Just
but
consumer
it, but
data.
Would, if we were in California, it would apply to our end user data, would it not?
There is a discussion that we have with city attorneys about that.
Okay.
And in general, at least the European Union regulation for European citizens living here in Portland, it does not apply.
Okay, mostly. Thank you. So we could establish here in Oregon our own standards at the local level currently as long as it didn't come into conflict with HIPAA or one of the other pre-existing
exactly.
privacy requirements.
And our approach is really starting from the big picture, like having an understanding that we really need to have this set of principles or rights for the city, and from there we can start developing all that like policy, which we hope to discuss a little bit more.
Oh, very good. Okay, then I'll stop. Good. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from... All right.
Good morning. I wanted to share a few minutes.
Can you hear your voice just a little bit? The
certainly.
In these work sessions, the sound system is very important.
Happy to raise my voice. The city's information security program provides protections across all of our services, and that's protection of city information and our customer community information as well, across six compliance domains, but our mission is to make information accessible to reduce those barriers. The mission of my team is to add lasting value. That's before security. So our privacy, the privacy of all of our information, is dependent upon having good security. And our program provides a strong, nationally aligned compliance framework that follows our NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies cybersecurity framework. And we also have bureau related risk management services. And we apply all of our standards across the city uniformly. We additionally have a user awareness information program. As you've probably heard, there's a mandatory information security awareness program that all city employees are asked to complete on our learning management system. The example here is a graphical representation of information security service catalog to offer you a condensed version of the many services that we offer. And I'm happy to describe any of them in detail with you and look forward to those opportunities. The focus on privacy would be around core questions related to confidential or public. The city has an administrative rule that defines confidential, restricted, and public to keep information categorization simple. Anything that's not confidential or public would fall in the middle, such as schedules and things that we don't want to have out in the public, but if there was a public records request, we would release it. But keeping the structure simple makes it easy for every employee in every moment to make simple decisions about this is confidential or not. The focus on security is awareness. The city has a number of controls to protect information, but it does not mandate behavior. So awareness is essential to behavior to follow administrative rules, policy guidelines. There are 18 in BTS, and there's one in Human Resources 4.08, which is one of the mandatory administrative rules that all employees are to read. And then we work with Bureau stakeholders for their engagement for all of their employees, because the bureaus are the owners, the stakeholders of their information, that which they collect, store, and use. An additional focus is the security of open data, big data, or smart cities. 95% of the city's information is public information, so we're focused on making that information readily accessible, available, usable. The 5% that's confidential, we try to protect.
So when you say privacy for open data, that almost sounds like an oxymoron. When you say that, do you mean making sure that the data that gets into the open data system is not inherently private information? So it's a screen prior to getting to the open data system. Is that what you're meaning?
Yes. That we, the city, provide due diligence and due care in reviewing information before it becomes part of open data.
Got it. Thank you. That's what I figured. Yes. Just want to clarify it. Thank you.
So how we classify information helps guide us to make sure that we don't leak personal identifiable information into the public. And we've done this on a number of occasions, whether it's Bike Town or the scooters. Whenever there is an interface with the public, a new technology, we make sure that there's a protocol for reviewing the information. An example with the Bike Town, we agreed that we needed to limit the destination location to the nearest intersection, not to the address of the user of the bikes, because that would give too much information. That open data will allow a third party or anyone in the public to identify who that individual is, where they stop, where they go, and in the future know who that person is. So it's about protecting anonymity where requested, but making the information largely available. Governance and privacy review is part of our scope, and we partner with all of the stakeholders across the city. Our goal is to have uniform policy and standard. The city will be a leader in that arena, but the work that has been done in California will set the gold standard for the United States. Those other compliance regimes that we spoke of, PCI, HIPAA, their scope of coverage of information is limited to that field. So we're looking for a citywide PII standard.
Do we currently have a citywide standard for data collection or storage or destruction, or are you building towards that?
We do.
We already have
administrative rules around retention. We have rules around public records requests. We have rules around administrative rules in BTS, like the last one, number 2.18, around classification. And those administrative rules point to others that say how you can and should use information. What we don't have is a clean one-stop, here's the holistic approach. And my team, in coordination with our Office of Management and Finance and the city attorneys and risk management, is to revise information policy and administrative rules so that it's readable, accessible, and actionable.
Thank you.
And I can add to that that the Open Data Program is also working on standards at the open data level and our accessible data for exchanging information internal to the city, but also external to the city. So we are actually just starting a citywide kickoff meeting on October 4th, calling all these different analysts throughout the city just to agree on what kind of standards we are going to follow.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Most certainly. And
just basically, I want to better understand your role within our org chart. So you're the Chief Information Security Officer.
Yes.
And in the course of your work, let's take two bureaus in particular. I used to have the Water Bureau, which had, a couple hundred thousand accounts where it was receiving a lot of confidential information from folks in the community. So there's a set of security concerns there. Now I have the Parks Bureau, which I don't know the total number of accounts, but I'm assuming it's a large number of dealing with the public and where we get confidential information. If you determine that any particular bureau is falling short of meeting a citywide standard or of a best practice or is especially vulnerable to some kind of hacking, who do you bring your concerns to?
I take them to my supervisor, who is Jeff Baer, the Chief Technology Officer. But we have dotted line responsibility to the mayor, and we would bring it as directly to the stakeholder and or the bureau director and you, the commissioner, to say, here are our concerns, here's our recommendation for remediation.
Okay, so that was a very helpful answer, because the step that seems to me to be unnecessary is to go to the mayor before you go to the commissioner in charge. With all due respect, the mayor's office is the great repository of lots of things that he would like to get off his plate. We have specific, the council has directed that certain positions that technically report to the mayor have what's called a dual report.
Yes.
So we expect that even though they may report to the mayor or may report to the CAO, they have an independent duty to report to the council, so that there's clear lines of communication. And there's maybe three particular job descriptions I can think of where that's baked into their duties. That's a delicate task. You're ultimately accountable to someone, but you're being told to do this opt-out so to make sure the council knows if there's a problem. I just want to be very clear here, because we all take this question of privacy very seriously, and I've learned a lot about the complete absence of privacy in my life just by Googling the word cancer a few times. And I tell this as sort of a dark humor, but you Google cancer enough on your home computer and you get unsolicited offers for burial insurance. That's how much privacy we have over of how we access the internet. So that means there's zero privacy. And that data is being aggregated and being used in ways that we never expected. So I'm just glad that in our presence, you've made very clear that if you believe there's a privacy risk, a data security risk, that you will bring that to Jeff's attention, but you and Jeff will then approach the commissioner in charge and the director of a particular bureau where there's a problem. Concurrently, you can notify the mayor. That's fine.
Right.
But the way we get a response is to go directly to the bureau and say, hey, you've got a problem on your firewall. You're not up to date on your software, you know, whatever. And I just want to be clear that that's, I think, our expectation, that we would get that early notification so we can start taking the necessary steps to fix the problem before it becomes a bigger problem.
That is absolutely correct. And for most use cases, most scenarios, we go directly to the data repository owner, the process owner, the business line owner, because they're the ones who control their use of information. If it were a larger issue, a medium or a high threat, then we would definitely take it directly to the bureau director and the commissioner in charge.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to go back to the mayor's question to you about do we have administrative rules and processes set up, and I appreciated your answer. In my experience over the last 10 years, most of those have been geared to, yes, certainly financial information. We don't want anybody else to have that, and we want to be open and transparent and to share a lot of things, and it's really only the past couple of years that we have started to realize, I have started to realize anyway, that there are these broader concerns of how that data could be used by people who don't share the same values that we do. So that's really kind of what we're doing here today, right, is to start that conversation. And I'm wondering, have you looked at the administrative rules that we have so far with that other lens rather than let's give out as much information as we can, thinking about what information is dangerous for some people if it gets out?
Yes, indeed. Every day, because the scope and scale of threats to information, whether it's the confidentiality or the privacy or security side, it's my daily concern. And I have a risk register that tracks how big are the risks, how threatening are they, how likely are they to affect the city, because not all risks are targeted towards municipalities. The information security team, we work with city attorneys. We work with risk management. We work with OMF policy advisors. We're constantly looking at ways to improve our policies or administrative rules, and I look forward in the coming months to bringing forward a large revamping of our policies so that it's a security manual, so that it's easy for everyone to assess access, human-readable language that then is internalizable and actionable.
Thank you. And then question for Judith. Are we going to get to the issue of how do we promote our equity goals, particularly for race and disability, if collecting that information may make the very people we're trying to help more vulnerable? Because I know Commissioner Fish mentioned the Parks Bureau. We kind of backed off of trying to get demographic information about people visiting the community centers because we just don't want some authorities to know which ones tend to have more people who may be identified as a person of color.
Absolutely. And I think that is a new term I've learned working with all these folks in the tech world is pain points. I used to call them sticky wickets. But it's the places where our interests bump up against each other. And we've been trying to have conversations around demographic collection. How do we track our equity efforts if we can't measure and create those data metrics? There are some interesting ways that people are finding to do that in safe ways for folks. I would actually highlight what PUA is doing with their hate incident reporting. And if you just boil it down, it was that they would collect the data and then disaggregate it and report to the city and to the public with non-identifiable aggregated data. So it is a big question for us. And I think that getting this piece clear will help us move forward with those questions.
Could I follow up on Commissioner Fish's question? Because it's prompted a memory that I buried somewhere. I used to be the state treasurer. And as such, we were part of an organization that, in and of its own right, was one of the largest banking institutions in the Northwest. We were very concerned about cybersecurity issues, not only because we do banking transactions and the Treasury managed pension funds, but also the college savings plan and other retail products. We had a very strong cybersecurity team. We had strong cybersecurity allies and vendors, and we concluded that the firewall was rock solid. It was as good as any firewall of any banking institution anywhere in the United States. But we were also cautioned that's not where the problem would likely be. The problem, we were assured, would likely be within the firewall. In other words, ourselves. We were the soft targets. And so here's where this relates to Commissioner Fish's question. If there is a data breach internally to an internal system, or even if there is an intentional abuse of information on an internal system, somebody uses a database for capricious purposes or illegal purposes, how do you find out?
Several capabilities. We have monitoring capabilities that monitor anomalies on the network. So when things are abnormal, so that if, Mayor Wheeler, if you never upload a gigabyte of data on a Saturday morning at 2 a.m. and all of a sudden your workstation starts to do that, we're going to know about it and have an automated alert, and someone will be paying attention to it right away. We have other capabilities that monitor where the data is and who, by access control rights, who has access to information. What the city does not yet have is a true data loss prevention capability. It's on our roadmap, is where we want to be. That would require a burden on all the city users to classify information. And if you, once you classify it, you can protect it. If you don't classify it, it's policy and training.
Has anybody ever done a baseline survey citywide, enterprise-wide, across all bureaus to identify the most sensitive databases and the ones where internal misuse of that database could lead to the most significant consequences?
There's been an inquiry. There's been a questionnaire conducted by the Confidential Restricted Information Committee, which has not been very active in the last number of months. But the goal is to do just that, is to find out where is our data, where is the sensitive data, what controls are around it, and how would we protect it so that it doesn't leave the organization.
So the data security protocol that you identified a moment ago, that does not reach to all databases throughout the city bureaus. Is that correct?
That is correct, because data is often managed by the bureaus.
Indeed it is, and that's my concern.
Right.
Because as Commissioner Frisch is... question implies, it implies that somebody finds out and makes the notification. And my concern is, what happens if somebody abuses a database and doesn't make a notification? How do you find out? And for me, that's the black box question.
Right.
There needs to be a check and balance to the system, particularly for our most vulnerable and I would just say highly proprietary databases.
Indeed.
Yes. Thank you.
Absolutely. And just I would like to add, as the goal for that open data citywide group is actually start doing those inventories through all these different bureaus and offices and organizations, so we can actually understand what everybody owns, what and what state that information is.
I'm wondering if this would be a good time to just make a segue into Kelsey's presentation, because I think it's going to give us the broader picture that will help illuminate some of these questions that we need to look at internally.
Yes, this has really been hyped in my office, and I'm told this is going to be an amazing presentation, so I'm really looking forward to this.
And we know she won't disappoint. I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Kelsey. Thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thanks for setting the bar high, folks. Hopefully the mic is at an appropriate distance. All right, great. So thank you all for having me here. I'm delighted to be talking about privacy today. I'm delighted to talk about privacy all day, every day, but particularly to municipalities who are thinking ahead of the, you know, sort of being leaders in this space and trying to get ahead of the curve on smart city privacy issues is very important. So I am Kelsey Finch. I'm a policy counsel at the Future of Privacy Forum. We are a consumer privacy nonprofit. We've been around for about 10 years, and we work to establish responsible data practices for emerging technologies in a number of spaces. I lead our work on smart cities and smart communities. I'm also the leader of our work on data de-identification, so all of those questions around how do you take out identifiers from data sets and aggregate them up and make them less privacy sensitive, as well as some work on data ethics and how you share data responsibly and balance out sort of other benefits and other public policy goals against privacy. So, great, that's the slide I was looking for. Sort of quickly, our smart cities mission is to help cities ask the right questions and to help them reach for the right tools. Because there's a lot of things going on in a smart city. There's a lot of new technologies. There's a lot of old technologies. And fortunately, there's a profession of privacy experts out there who have been working on some of these questions before, but might not always be accessible to municipal government and state and local government.
Could I just ask you, since I'm not young enough to see this slide anymore, but I can tell it's a really good and very knowledge full slide. Could I get a full page copy of this just at your convenience?
Absolutely.
Thank
we'll
you.
Send you one. We've got a good poster size one. There's also an interactive online version where you can click on things and you
can good. I'll just do that then. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So just quickly, our team's focus around smart cities has been both on how data flows into and through them and what kind of protections and safeguards you have in place for that process, and then also on how data flows out of cities, because that's an important part of the ecosystem as well. And that's where I'm going to talk a little bit about our work with Seattle around their open data program in a couple of minutes. But so you guys have this graphic. Sorry that it's a little bit tiny. There's a lot going on, and I think that's sort of the goal, what we were trying to highlight with it, is to show the tremendous possibility and the complexity of the cities of the future that we're striving for. And I think it's important to keep in mind that these technologies can really do a lot of good. They can help make our cities more livable, more sustainable, and more equitable if we do this right, if we take privacy and civil liberty concerns very seriously and we attack them at the front end, you can lead to sort of this really fantastic and positive improvement in the city experience and in our communities. I think part of this is also highlighting the variety of stakeholders who need to be engaged and whose interests are at play and whose voices need to be heard. The bigger version of that shows the stakeholders a little bit more clearly. But it's not just that state and local governments have an interest here. It's not just that community members have an interest. But business and academics and researchers of all shapes and sizes also can learn a lot and find a lot of value in the data and the technology that is going to be flowing through our cities shortly. And I think also this helps reflect the idea that we shouldn't think about these technologies in a silo. It might be that a certain department wants to, you know, use a new data system, have new data flows, find a new technology to collect things, or just ask different questions of different people. And it's important to think about if those are happening in lots of different silos, you're going to have a bigger cumulative impact than you intend, and that people's lived experiences, seeing new sensors pop up on streetlights or getting new questions and, whatever kinds of engagements they have with city departments already, that can have an impact on people's expectations and on their preferences and on whether or not they feel like this is an improvement in the world or if it's something that's going to, if this is really cool or if this is really creepy, is sort of the basic binary that we tend to think about. And at this point, I want to emphasize also an important caveat, which is that for my work and my organization, we focus on consumer spaces. And when we think about smart cities, we're thinking much more in line of traditional sensor networks and the public services as opposed to things that are primarily law enforcement or surveillance driven. So we're thinking about sort of the urban planning, making sure that the garbage trucks are, you know, more efficient and making sure that people are getting services in a better and more equitable way, as opposed to things that are primarily for law enforcement purposes, either state, local, or federal level. So just keep that in mind. And I know that Brian's got some really fantastic work after me. They are definitely the experts in this space and can elaborate on some of those issues a little bit more. So I'm going to head to the next slide. And all of this is really just by way of saying that it's important that we recognize that all of these two technologies, and not just the things that are going to appear, in front of you as sort of local officials, but also, in your lives, I think Cambridge Analytica's left a lasting impact, but also there's just this new influx of technologies, and privacy norms and expectations are changing. We're at a point of very unsettled public sensibility around privacy. What people expect will happen with their data, what they would prefer would happen with their data, is very unclear. It's changing all the time. As people learn to use new technologies, as the laws change, as the technologies themselves continue to speed up. So I think it's really important that in this time of uncertainty, we are thoughtful and that we engage the public and that we hear these voices before putting new technologies into public spaces, before using new types of data flows in new ways. And so for that, I'm going to turn to the next slide. I want to highlight some of the things that make smart city privacy particularly important and particularly consequential. I think Hector did a great job and Christopher did a great job of highlighting some of the privacy and security risks that we think about generally, but I want to highlight a couple of things that make smart cities a little unique and a little bit more important for us to deal with. And a big one is that it's, as I said, there's a lot of existing technologies that you'll see repurposed into smart city solutions. And so there's a lot of things we have tools for already. We have ways to manage the risks that come around using drones in various spaces or in having sensor networks or in using sort of real-time data flows. But smart cities are at the confluence of a lot of major privacy trends, so big data trends, the Internet of Things, mobile privacy, increasingly connected worlds that we're in, and increasingly folks are really interested in artificial intelligence or algorithmic or automated decision-making and thinking about how to repurpose data so that you're not collecting the same things 18 times. You collect it once, and you can use it for 18 different purposes. And trying to think about that in a privacy-sensitive way can be really complex. It's also really, I think, the most important thing to keep in mind is the power asymmetries that come between local government individuals. So as we're introducing new technologies or as we're introducing new information about individuals, just right, the familiar term or sort of amorphism that knowledge is power. And so are you introducing data and technologies that are going to give individuals more insights into the city, or will it just give the city more insight into individuals? And to parallel that, are you going to give more ability for individuals to change the city's behavior, to hold local government accountable, or is this merely a way for local government to change individual behaviors, often in subtle or unfelt ways? So those are really important things to keep in mind as you're considering the tremendous responsibility of implementing these technologies. It's also important to recognize that public spaces are different, both in privacy law and in people's expectations, their reasonable expectations of privacy. And so a lot of these technologies are going to help blur the line between public spaces and private spaces. And knowing what you're doing in your home and what utilities, what refrigerator you have and what time of day you go to sleep or you do your dishes is captured by utility data that's going to be used and can be transferred to the city. And so having important restrictions around what that can be used for, who can access that data, will go a long way towards addressing those things. But it's important also just to recognize that that line is blurring, and that's helping keep these privacy norms in a much more unstable manner than they have been in the past. And then finally, I think the thing that I like to emphasize here is that there's a lot of public-private collaboration in these spaces, and I think that's great. There's a lot of expertise, and there's a lot of privacy knowledge that the private sector and the technology providers have that local governments, frankly, don't always have at this point in time. But it's important to find ways to build that expertise internally to make privacy programs sustainable and scalable as these technologies grow and become a more important part of state and local government experiences, and finding ways to create new oversight and accountability mechanisms as we have new technologies and we have new data flows going on within our communities. And one thing that I didn't put in here but is actually the most important of all, and I'll talk a little bit more about in the open data context, is the need to balance privacy against other important public policy goals. I say this and sort of I'm the privacy advocate in the room right now, but it's we recognize also that transparency in government or public security or other things are equally important, that communities need to come to decisions on their own amongst themselves about how those balance out against each other. And I think exactly to your point about how do you sort of manage equity and racial justice goals without also invading privacy is a very difficult task and a very important one. And at some point, communities need to have conversations and figure out where those lie, because it's very different for every community, and it's different for every individual. So there's a lot of work around engagement, education, and communication that needs to happen in that space. Let me go to the next one. And so those are sort of the risks. I also wanted to highlight quickly, because I know I don't have a ton of time, the ways that my organization at least thinks about the roles and responsibilities that local government can take on when implementing smart city technologies. And so the first one is that, sort of like any other enterprise, you have responsibilities as a data steward. And so a lot of these are the things that Christopher was talking about, and it sounds like are already well established and in place. And so having governance programs, privacy programs, security programs, having risk management approaches is very important. Doing your due diligence and managing your vendors and thinking about how you're going to do ethical reviews, if that's already part of your process or if that's something that we're increasingly seeing in a number of enterprises. There's also a really interesting role for smart cities to play as platforms, as sort of data intermediaries, sometimes sort of like acting as the app store of a city. So allowing city data flows to go to companies or entrepreneurs and individuals and seeing what kind of really interesting things can be built upon that. There's a lot of new transit apps or Zillow data or other things that are built upon APIs from city data. And along with that comes a really important gatekeeping role of saying what kind of uses are appropriate and which ones aren't using the city's data. And thinking about how to do privacy notices and transparency and what kind of privacy policies folks will need to have when using your data downstream. And thinking about sort of what kinds of purposes will or should be supported. So there's an important role as a platform. And then finally, you know, obviously there's an important role just acting as local government and having that the power of the state there. So thinking around things like open data and the Public Records Act and where does that intersect with privacy interests, thinking about how you do public communications and engagement and speak to your communities and listen to your communities and involve their voices. How do you deal with things like surveillance and law enforcement and those technologies and how they're being used in your communities? How do you think about ways to give individuals controls when they want to opt out, if they can opt out, if that's a feasible option. And thinking then, therefore, also about the equity and the fairness and the anti-discrimination issues that are so important in these spaces. So those are some of the roles, responsibilities that are top of mind for us. I'm going to take that a little bit more into practice and talk now about our work with Seattle over the last couple of years. So that's sort of the background of how we've been thinking about these issues, sort of at a high level. What we did, though, was so this was one of these areas where we had to do some of that difficult balancing of two different very important public policy measures. So we, in, I believe, 2016, Mayor of Seattle had passed an executive order that said that Seattle's data was going to be open by default as long as it didn't have privacy or security impacts. And so the goal was one that I fully support, which is to make the city's data available to the public for any potential reuse that they can think of, to share this value, to give it back to the folks that it came from, and to see what kind of innovative things can be built on it. And so as part of that, to their credit, they recognize the privacy impacts can be quite serious and quite complex because it's very difficult, it turns out, to appropriately or to sort of identify in advance what can identify an individual in a data set. There's any number of things that in combination can start to single out an individual or identify them. And so we wanted to create a process and a methodology that they could do that in a more consistent way and that they could find ways to document what they were, you know, sort of that process and be accountable for that process. And then if it turns out down the line that something unpredictable happened, at least you understand what the thought process was. You can refer back to it. You can change it and adopt it and grow it for the future.
Kelsey, could you give us an example of how that might happen? When you're talking about...
Sure. So one of the ones that I think is a very clear one and is a good example of the trying to balance the public policy benefits and risks around releasing particular data sets are 911 call data sets, which are very popular and I think many, if not most, open data portals sort of across this country will have some version of this. So I believe Seattle's was updated. It was maybe every 15 minutes or every 24 hours. But it was a data set of all 911 calls. And it had addresses, and it had what the call was for, and it had what the response time was. And so this is really important information for creating heat maps around crime, for seeing what the city's response rate is for emergency services, and for accountability over the sort of policing and ambulance services and EMS generally. So there's a lot of benefit to this data. At the same time, it's very sensitive information if an ambulance or a police